the smoke of these medicines is what puts you in touch with that other dimension, the spirit world.
Welcome to Radio Free School.
I'm going to read this book called The Shaman's Apprentice. In the Trio Indian village of Guatemala, deep in the Amazon rainforest, Kamenya lay in his hammock, burning with fever. His mother sat nearby fanning him. "Kamenya, Kamenya," she whispered, but he did not answer. She spoke gently to her husband. "It is time. Take him." He picked up the boy and carried him to the hut of the shaman. The medicine man. Softly chanting, the shaman Natala disappeared into the forest. He returned with leaves, roots, and bark, which he put into a pot of water boiling on the fire. Stirring and singing, he asked the sickness to leave the boy. When the mixture had cooled, he lifted Kamanya's head and poured the warm medicine into the boy's mouth. The shaman's song ended as night came. Kamanya's parents sat beside him until morning. When the boy awoke, the fever was gone. As the years passed, Kamanya would remember the shaman's ritual as if it were all a dream, but he never forgot that the shaman had saved his life. Kamanya swam and fished in the river's clean waters and ran free as the wind blew the forest with the Ever Boys. Unlike the Ever Boys, Kamanya often slipped away and silently followed the shaman as he collected the plants from which he made his powerful medicines. Kamanya hoped that he could learn Natala's wisdom and one day become the next shaman. Natala was pleased with the boy and showed Kamanya which plants he used for healing. One day, a man came from another tribe came down the river. He staggered from his canoe up the riverbank into the Trio village. He told the Trios that strangers had come to his people's village in search for gold. These miners had dug up the ground, and they carried a disease so strong that the tribe's shaman could not cure it. A few days later, the man passed on to the spirit world. Soon, people in the Trio village became sick with a strange illness, and Natala could not cure it. Several months later, another canoe came down the river. The tall people who entered the village had the whitest skin the Trios had ever seen, and hair the color of straw. Their clothes covered their entire bodies. These white people were missionaries who had come to convert the Trios in their religion. They gave the sick people little white pills, and soon everyone in the village felt well. They called the sickness malaria and said the little white pills contained quinine. Malaria's treatment. The missionaries gave the Trios new clothes to wear, taught them how to read and write, and translated the Bible into Trio. Before the missionaries arrived, the Trios believed in God who told them to respect the first and sustain them. But the white people's medicines had done what the shaman's medicine could not. So now the Trios believed that the missionaries' gods must be more powerful than their own gods. Kamanya watched sadly as the shaman lost his place of honor within the tribe, and at the council fire, he told Natala, "Tama, wise one, the day will come when they again will see that you are the wisest of them all." For years, life went on this way. Then the missionaries went away, believing their work complete. One day, while Kamanya was fishing, he saw another stranger coming up the river, a young woman accompanied by a guide from another village. The woman, Gabrielle, explained that she had come to study the healing magic of the forest plants. The chief told her about malaria and asked her why she wanted to learn their medicine when hers was so much stronger. "Do you know where the treatment for malaria comes from?" Gabrielle asked. She explained the missionaries had learned about quinine, the medicine in the white peels, from the forest people of Peru. "This healing medicine comes from the bark of the chinchona tree," she said. The chief was astonished. A shaman's medicine had saved them after all. Every day, Gabriella followed the shaman through the forest and learned about the hundreds of plants he used for medicines. After several months, Gabriella left. But every year, she returned to Guatemala to learn with Kamanya more and more of the shaman's wisdom. Now Gabriella could speak effortlessly in their language. And on this visit, she had a special gift, a book she had made for them. She carefully unwrapped her handbook of all their medicinal plants and said, "Now you have two books in your language, the Bible and this, the wisdom of Natala. Native people will never forget the shaman's wisdom. Perhaps one day the people of the world may benefit from Natala's knowledge of healing powers of the rainforest." And so it was that Kamanya became the shaman's apprentice. And so it was that after Natala passed onto the spirit world, Kamanya became the shaman, patient and wise, to heal his people.
Okay, I'm going to read the author's note. "All of the world's cultures use plants and other grown things as medicines. Even in our industrialized society, most of the medicines we use are manufactured from synthetic, man-made chemicals based on compounds found in natural products. Aspirin, for example, is based on a chemical that came from willow bark. Codeine in cough syrup was derived from chemicals in the opium poppy, and penicillin was first extracted from a bread mold. In the more remote corners of the world, such as the jungles of the Amazon, people have always used the forest as their medicine cabinet. For thousands of years, shamans have passed on the information about the healing properties of rainforest plants from one generation to the next. As forest peoples come into increasing contact with the outside world, however, their traditions are being disrupted as they are led to believe that modern synthetic medicine is always more effective than their own. In many instances, their traditional medicines are as effective as modern medicine, and in some cases more so. This book tells the story of one tribe who learned the importance of their own knowledge about the healing properties of the rainforest. It is based on a true story that was first told in the book Tales of the Shaman's Apprentice."
Radio Free School on CFMU.
My name is Janet Hill. I work at De Duwata Desnos Aboriginal Health Center as the Traditional Healing Program Coordinator. Healing is about, it's a holistic approach, and it just doesn't deal with the body, but it also deals with the the mind and the emotions and the spirit. And that's what my job is as a traditional healing coordinator, to bring programs that that look at the whole person, that look at the spiritual aspect of a person, and where healing can come to you from a spiritual perspective. Traditional healing, to understand what it is, mm-hmm. is that we used healing methods that were traditional methods that we've used for centuries. And now it's been brought into mainstream. It's changed because obviously we don't have what we used to have. We've lost a lot. So we have to use what we have, and we utilize our healers. We have a healer who comes up from Ganawage, a Mohawk woman, and we utilize healers from the area. But it's not just the healers, that we try to bring programs that will help us to come to a place of peace, because I think that's originally, we were a people of peace, and it was that peaceful mind, that quiet, peaceful mind that kept us healthy, that kept the body going. You know, I've heard it said that our bodies were made to last hundreds of years, and it can if we have the right attitude, the right mindset, and, you know, if we have this peace that our history talks about. You know, the great law of the Haudenosaunee people is based on the concept of peace, and it talks about the good mind and what that good mind can bring about. So I think from a traditional healing perspective, it is about healing all aspects, because aspects of the self are interconnected, you know, the mind, the body, the spirit. That illness can begin in the spirit. If your spirit is not working correctly, they're all interconnected, and one works with or against the other. And I think the key to it is having this peaceful, quiet mind. This quiet, peaceful self plays on the body, it reflects, and somehow it boosts your immune system, and it makes you much stronger. They say that, you know, that is a very, very powerful medicine to have, is peace of mind. That's really the only medicine you need on a very deep level.
Who heals in the traditional, in traditional healing? Is it everyone can heal themselves, or is it...
Absolutely.
Or is there a special person like...
Well, there are people like our healers who can guide you. They can guide you, and they're facilitators to help you along, to help you heal yourself, because it is yourself that needs to do the work. I'll take my own self, for example. I had many people help me and bring awareness to me in my healing journey, but I've had to do the work, and it was totally up to me. And I'm constantly on a healing journey. You know, it's not just a thing that, okay, I work towards and say, okay, I've reached that place, and now I don't have to do anything because I'm healed. Well, I'm not healed, and healing is a hard, long journey, and it takes commitment, and it takes awareness at every moment of what you're putting out there, how you're perceiving, how you're interpreting, how you're reacting. I think it's a discipline rather than a state of mind. It's something that you have to pay attention to, like, every minute of your waking day. On the table here, we have what is called the four sacred medicines, which is cedar, sweetgrass, sage, and tobacco. The sage is from the west, sweetgrass is the north, cedar is the south, tobacco is the east. They all have their place in where they come from, but they're all used mainly for the same purpose. These medicines are used symbolically in ceremonies. It's said that the smoke of these medicines is what puts you in touch with that other dimension, the spirit world, so to speak, mm-hmm. or the creator. That these medicines can open up, and creation can hear your prayers, your wishes, your thoughts. And you use these to purify your mind before you go into ceremony. In Native spirituality and culture, there's lots of symbolism. So there's lots of symbolism behind the four sacred medicines. Mm-hmm. Cedar is used... It's used in to sweat lodges to purify. It's used to clean out your, what people call cleaning out your house, where you clean your house out with sage, and then it's a sweep through it. It sort of wards off negative energy or bad energy, whatever you want to call it. That's the sweetgrass. They call this the hair of Mother Earth, and that's why it's in braids. That is sage over there. There's white sage, which has a really sweet, pungent odor. And then there's, on the other end, there's tobacco. And the other medicines that you see there are medicines for what ails you. Like, you can see there's birthing tea there, there's moon tea, there's sweet flag, there's all these other different medicines for whatever ails you. It's from a medicine perspective is that native spirituality is all about wholeness, that we're all connected, we're all intricately connected to one another. We are connected to the medicines, and we communicate with the medicines when we go to pick them. An offering of tobacco is given, and you talk to that medicine, and you tell that medicine what you're picking it for and how you want this medicine to help you. And that these medicines are alive. They work with you through that spiritual aspect. And an offering of tobacco is made so the medicines know that you are thankful that they're here to help you. And you pick them, and it is said that the spirit of the medicine is what helps in the healing, as well as the medicinal qualities contained in that medicine.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that what it is? Like the spirit, that's what's contained in it, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay.
Say a person's a non-Aboriginal person. Is it an intrusion or some kind of appropriation for people to use it, or is it something that anybody can use? I mean, I'm just wondering.
No, that's not. It's not. I don't think 100%. It's. If you were a non-native and you were coming to me for healing purposes, and I, you know, gave you some of my medicine, I don't think that. I think it's up to each individual healer how they work and mm-hmm. if they want to share that medicine with somebody. But I can't think that anything that their creator put here is limited. We can't limit it to just a select few, that we have to give it all to everyone to share. And I think that's that it was meant to share with the world. There's a lot of knowledge, you know, indigenous knowledge, and I think indigenous knowledge about medicines, that I think we have to start looking at preserving those and, you know, protecting those. The government is working on legislation that they will now control natural medicines, and there's a huge debate on whether that should be allowed, because it would infringe on our traditional, the traditional aspect of medicine. So definitely it has to be preserved, and there are definitely elders and people with knowledge of the medicines, and I think a lot is being done to try to preserve that knowledge and keep it within a native context. They say that everything that is growing has a purpose, what that purpose is. I mean, like I said, we've lost so much, mm-hmm. and I believed at one time there was a number of us who actually just, it was just general information, that it wasn't something that was, you know, so protected and held. It was just something that we knew. It was a way of life for us, and that if we were to take a walk outside, I could point just several things out, the weeds in the front yard that could help you, for example, plantain, you know. That's good for you have a cut or something that is festering.
A sting.
And you can just put that on there, and that draws mm-hmm. out all the impurities. Mm-hmm. Or even just how many times you walk down the street and you see a cedar tree. That's medicine right there.
Right.
And cedar is good to bath in. You can make a potion of it by just steeping it in hot water. And when you take your bath, mix it with your bath water. And it gets rid of all the negative stuff that we hold in this energy around us. And sometimes if you do bathe with it, you can see that there'll be a black ring on your bathtub. I don't know how much that has to do with it, but there's all kinds of medicines out there. Sometimes we sponsor medicine walks. We'll have a healer come into the center and take a bunch of clients out and help them to identify just little things, you know, that you can use for everyday medicines. Like my mother used to make concoction out of bone set and something, a medicine that we call squite da, which is called, I think, colt's foot. It was just things that grew outside, and
right.
when we'd get sick, she'd make a concoction of that and feed it to us and tell us to drink it. So, how do we heal animals? Traditionally, I think it was the way we did it with everything else, that we knew this, that we were interconnected with everything. At one time, the elders say there was a time when we did communicate with the animals, whether it was through talking or just communicating our thoughts and feelings, that we were able to communicate with the animals. But like I said, we don't have that anymore. We don't have that ability anymore. So I don't know if these medicines, if my dog had a cold, I don't know if I could give him the same medicines for a cold that I would drink. But that's a good question. All healing is getting back to knowing your true self, that we are spiritual beings and we're having a body experience or a human experience. And I think we all need to, I know, I need to get back to operating from that place of spirit instead of operating through my story, and operating through my fear. And the mind is so powerful, and the mind plays such a huge role in our health. And I think there's more and more coming out around that. And I think that our ancestors knew that. They had that good mind, and they knew that. And I think that it would serve us good to just to sort of investigate, you know, and find out, what does it mean to have a good mind? What is healing? What does that mean? And really go about it with a sincere effort. I think once you open yourself up to healing, things just begin to happen for you. It's an opening up of your soul, and I think a quieting of the mind, because it is our crazy minds that are always yakking at us, telling us, you know, can't do that, you can't do this, you're not good enough, you're not smart enough, you're not rich enough, you know, just always sabotaging us, so to speak. And if we can learn to quiet our minds, then this other stuff can come through.
I'll just put a little cedar and some sage mixed together.
Do we have to take our hats off?
Yeah, take your hat off. It's just a sign of respect.
Is that an eagle feather?
This isn't an eagle feather, this is a turkey feather.
Okay.
Now, this is always used before, usually before we enter into a meeting or any kind of gathering. What it does is you just take the smoke and you run it over your head, and that's supposed to clear your mind. You bring it to your mouth, and that lets you just to speak good words. And you bring it to your ears to let you hear only good things, and then to your heart, because that's the heart of everything. That's where your spirit resides. And think good thoughts when you're doing it.
Laughing?
Just bring it down like that. Bring it down. Now turn around, not to your back. Okay. Draw it to your mouth, and to your ears. Okay. You just participate in the smudging ceremony.
Thank you.
That's
fun.
Wane wache yelo ade o make yayo. Wane wache yelo. Ade o maki ayo, wane wa shielu. Ade o maki ayo, wia na mene. Ade na mechi ho, wia na mene yuwa. Ashi ya cheche chielu, wane wa shielu. Ade o maki ayo, wane wa chielu. Ade o maki ayo, wane wa chielu. Ade ya no haine yo. Wechoneye, Wechoneye, Wechone chakuki, elo na wa waji e na no e ne yo. Oshe mana yo, oshe mana yo, oshe mana yo, oshe mana yo, oshe mana yo. Oshe manayo, wane wachie yano haine yuwa. Wakata kanyayo, oshe manayo, oshe manayo, oshe manayo, oshe manayo, wane wachie yano haine yuwa.
You are listening to Radio
free school on CFMU.
Here's a piece by Ivan Illich, Health as One's Own Responsibility. No, thank you. I am convinced that health and responsibility belong to a lost past, and that, since I am neither a romantic, a visionary, nor a dropout, must renounce both of them. But only if I succeed in unequivocally articulating this renunciation of health and responsibility can I escape the approach that I am nothing more than a rhetorical critic. I do not speak my no as a global thinker seeking an unobstructed channel for ecological dictatorship. I can imagine no complex of controls capable of saving us from the flood of poisons, radiations, goods and services which sicken humans and animals more than ever before. There is no way out of this world. I live in a manufactured reality, ever further removed from creation, and I know today what that signifies, what horror threatens each of us. A few decades ago, I did not yet know it. At that time, it seemed possible that I could share responsibility for the remaking of this manufactured world. Today, I finally know what powerlessness is. Responsibility is now an illusion. In such a world, being healthy is reduced to a combination of the enjoyment of techniques, protection of the environment, and adaptation to the consequences of techniques, all three of which are, inevitably, privileges. It is senseless today to speak of health. Health and responsibility have been made largely impossible from a technical point of view. This was not clear to me when I wrote Medical Nemesis, and perhaps was not yet the case at that time. In hindsight, it was a mistake to understand health as a quality of survival and as an intensity of coping behavior. Adaptation to the misanthropic genetic, climatic, chemical, and cultural consequences of growth is now described as health. Neither the Galenic, Hippocratic representations of humoral balance, nor the Enlightenment utopia of a right to health and happiness, nor any Vedic or Chinese concepts of well-being have anything to do with survival in a technical system. Health as function, process, mode of communication, health as an orienting behavior that requires management, these belong with those post-industrial conjuring formulas that suggestively connote but denote nothing that can be grasped. As soon as health is addressed, it has already turned into a sense-destroying pathogen, a member of a word family that Uwe Porksen calls plastic words, word husks that one can wave around, making oneself important, but which can say or do nothing. The situation is similar with responsibility, although to demonstrate this is much more difficult. In a world that worships an ontology of systems, ethical responsibility is reduced to a legitimizing formality. The poisoning of the world, to which I contribute with my flight from New York to Frankfurt, is not the result of an irresponsible decision, but rather of my presence in an unjustifiable web of interconnections. It would be politically naive, after health and responsibility have been made technically impossible, to somehow resurrect them through inclusion into a personal project. Some kind of resistance is demanded. Instead of brutal self-enforcement maxims, the new health requires the smooth integration of my immune system into a socio-economic world system. Being asked for responsibility is, when seen more clearly, a demand for the destruction of sense and self. This proposed self-assignment to a system that cannot be experienced stands in stark contrast to suicide. It demands self-extinction in a world hostile to death. Precisely because I also seek tolerance for suicide in a society that has become immortal, I must publicly expose the idealization of healthy self-integration. One cannot feel healthy. One can only enjoy her own functioning in the same way as one enjoys the use of her computer. To demand that our children feel well in the world that we leave them is an insult to their dignity. Then to impose on them responsibility for this insult is a base act. In many respects, the biological, demographic, and medical research of the last decade, focusing on health, showed that medical achievements only contributed in an insignificant way to the medically defined level of health in the population. Secondly, studies have found that even preventative medicine is of secondary importance in this respect. Further, we now see that a majority of these medical achievements are deceptive misnomers, actually prolonging the suffering of madmen cripples, old fools, and monsters. Therefore, I find it reprehensible that the self-appointed health experts now emerge as caring monitors who, with their slogans, put the responsibility of suffering onto the sick themselves. In the last 15 years, propaganda in favor of hypochondria has certainly led to a reduction in smoking and butter consumption among the rich and to an increase in their jogging. It has also led to the fact that the US now exports more tobacco, butter, and jogging shoes. But throughout the world, propaganda for medically defined health coincided with an increase in misery for the many.
The end!
I'm gonna wrap myself in paper. I'm gonna daub myself with glue. Stick some stamps on the top of my head. I'm gonna mail myself to you.
Contact Radio Free School at grassroots@hwcn.org or mail P.O. Box 19, 1280 Main Street West, Hamilton, Ontario, Canada, L8S1CO.